Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome once again to Madame Perry's Salon, the podcast that loves you. I am your hostess, your groove mistress, spiritual advisor, and cruise director, Madame Perry. But you can call me Jen, Jennifer, JP, Perry. I don't care, whatever feels comfortable. And I just want to say thank you to everyone who's been listening and following and subscribing, whatever podcast platform you listen on, Podbean or Stitcher, Apple, it doesn't matter. I just want to make sure that you get the people, you get the information, you get to listen live or download later, which is still always free. And if you're listening live tonight, this is April 13th, 2020. And yes, I know we're all having to look sometimes just to make sure we have the date right. Somebody said, I think I reposted on Instagram, somebody's post that, you know, since we've all been in isolation, it's like being in Vegas. We're losing money by the minute. Drinks are acceptable at any time, and nobody knows what day it is. So if you would remind me, tomorrow I'm speaking to a class via Zoom at Clark Atlanta University, and I am writing it down everywhere so I won't forget. But anyway, if you're listening live tonight, yes, I was going somewhere with that. April 30th, if you're listening on Blog Talk Radio, I want you to know that if you haven't followed, you could just click that pink box up at the top that says follow in white letters, and that way you'll know what's happening. We have had so many cool guests lately, and people ask, oh, and people who've been leaving, especially leaving reviews on Stitcher, and this is one of my favorite things, because I always want to know, what do you want? What do you want? Entertainment, information, just to talk to somebody on here? I always want to know what interests you. And people have written on the reviews that they like the fact that sometimes I'll have some people on that they know. They know who they are because they're songwriters or musicians or authors or NASA JPL people, or because it's somebody totally brand new to them that they didn't know, and that you all like the familiar and then meeting new people. I like that. So let me know, because I want to keep make sure I bring cool people. And I have been so fortunate. By the way, last week we had Kyle Mayberry, and he's a sports agent and CEO of True Athletics. That's TRUATHLETIX. If you have son, grandson, nephew, daughter, granddaughter, niece, anybody, sister that is interested in getting to college, needs a student athlete kind of situation, then you can go to him. He has packages. He knows how to get students. Doesn't matter what their sport is, tennis, basketball, football, lacrosse, whatever. He has a team of professional advisors made up of retired and current professional athletes with many years of experience, and they can help find the right university or college set up and get you some recruitment action going on there. So, you know, I'm still sharing his social media information. And also coming up soon, we've got Carol Leavitt, John Oates from Hall & Oates, Victoria Price, daughter of Vincent Price. We've got lots of people coming in the next few weeks, so keep up with this. And, this will be great. Now, tonight, you've seen the post I've been putting out everywhere, and I've been talking to friends about this. I am so excited about tonight's guest. Of course, they come from our dear friends at Steve Allen Media, whom I adore, everyone there. One thing that I hear about from friends and talking to different people is that, especially now, now that we all have a lot more time to, I don't know, squirrel picnic tables or maybe redo our closets or just think about things, a lot of people I know that have some time to consider, you know, am I who I'm meant to be? What happened to the girl I was going to be, the woman I'm meant to be? Am I a good enough mom? Am I too close? Am I a helicopter? Am I a snowplow mom? Or what about me? Have I sacrificed too much? Have I sacrificed enough? And, you know, I have so many friends. All my friends that are mothers, I think, are magnificent. I'm not a mother, but I think that every one of them, to me, and they always say it's the people who don't have kids that know how everybody else should raise them. Well, all of my friends, I think, are doing a magnificent job. But tonight, I am so excited to have author, speaker, and psychotherapist Patty Ashley, PhD, LPC, and really cool chick here to talk with us. We were going to have her here for March Women's Month, but I had a problem on my end. And but hey, we think Women's Month should be all the time. So first, let me welcome right here for her first time in the genie bottle, Dr. Patty Ashley. Welcome to Madame Perry Salon.
Hi, thank you, Jennifer. It's great to be here.
I am delighted to have you here. I'm so excited. And yeah, I know you've probably heard people say that, you know, it's everybody that doesn't have kids thinks they ought to know. They know what everybody else should do. And I used to be that way, always like, well, why don't they do this or that? And then the older I get, the more I think, they're doing a great job. I don't think I could have done half as good.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's
from
true. Wasn't there a book called,
spot.
You know, I thought I was a good parent until I had kids or something like that?
Yeah.
It's a tough job. It's a tough one.
And I think that in a lot of the things that I have read of yours, about you, sometimes, and I think we're going to talk about your newest book and some of your other books too, but I've seen, and I think that you discuss this too, and I know you probably have a lot of clients have asked you this that have brought you to this, as well as yourself being a mother, but sometimes I think women feel, or people feel, that their friends as mothers tend to sort of be so involved in caring for their children and doing a good job and doing their best for their family. We wonder if we or if they tend to lose track of who they are.
Definitely. So my first book, Living in the Shadow of the Too Good Mother Archetype, was based on my doctoral dissertation because I raised four children. They're all in their 30s. My oldest is going to be 40 this year. I cannot believe it.
Oh, my.
I know. Back in the day when I had young children, it was the 1980s, and we were learning all kinds of things about how to raise children in ways that were very different from our parents and our grandparents. And what I found in my peer group, as well as in my professional work, which at that time was as a parent educator, that there was this never-ending feeling of not being a good enough mom, even though it was, you know, moms were doing way too much. You know, when the script says exit stage left, we're still on the stage, you know. So it was a phenomenon that I was noticing. So I did my doctoral research on it. And, you know, the summary of all that is, I think we're in a learning curve. We've learned so much about our social emotional development in the last few, when we started researching how to raise kids. I always say we're the only species, humans, that have to research ourselves to understand how to do relationships, because the animals are out on their own. But we've done it wrong for a lot of years, and so we're just kind of cleaning up the shrapnel from the old stuff. Parents, particularly moms, were trying to overcompensate and give my kids everything I didn't have. The real work for moms is to go back and heal some of their own emotional wounds that came from the old. You know, do as I say, not as I do. You should be ashamed of yourself. Don't be angry. Don't. Alice Miller's Your Own Good gives you really clear old parenting text that say things like beat the devil out of a two-year-old when they're having a temper tantrum, you know, break the will of the child before they're old enough to remember. And what we know about carrying ancestral DNA now for possibly four generations, it all makes perfect sense as to why parents today have been trying to overcompensate. And then that's how they lose themselves. So I find it really fascinating what's going on right now with the social distancing and people having to be together so much. And I think, you know, I was talking to my daughter. We're actually getting ready to do, I'm doing some courses online. And in May, we're going to launch a program we call Mom. So we're going to do Moms in Real Life in Quarantine. And, you know, I was talking to her yesterday. She has a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. And I said, you know, I think that one of the things that's happening right now is these moms who tried so hard to shelter their kiddos from pain and sorrow and grief can't do that anymore because kids are feeling pain and sorrow and grief. We're feeling a lot of that in, and this is, goes back to the old school, don't cry before I, unless I give you something to cry about. Don't be angry. Don't be this. We don't have a lot of experience with what to do with our emotional, social, emotional selves, and now we're all quarantined together. We can't
call it
lawnmower parents. You know, we try and smooth over everything for our kiddos, but we're just trying to make things better for ourselves, and we can't do that. So I think no pun intended, stuck in a place of having to look at some things that we haven't looked at deeply enough to really affect some deeper changes. I know it was a long answer to your question, but hopefully I answered it.
Yeah, and by the way, let me just take just a moment to step outside the conversation, to do an aside and say, listen, after what you started off with the 40-year-old daughter, I have been watching your interview lately. I have seen your pictures, and I've got your next book subject, if you don't mind. Tell us how looking good at you, as you, okay? Because I'm thinking, okay, what was she, a child bride? When did she go to school? I don't know. So anyway.
Thank you. I'll take that any day. I love it.
You are absolutely gorgeous. So that, please give us that book too, because we already know, you know, whatever, you know what you're doing. Okay. So, you know, in different generations, like I'm from the baby boomer generation or Gen X, Y, I guess different types or styles of mothering or parenting kind of reflected from the media at the time, be it TV shows or whatever, or films. But one thing I want to know is when mothers self-sacrifice, you know, I'll give up something, I'll give this up for my child. And that's got to sometimes, I've always thought, you know, where does the mother, you know, she's pay off somewhere. Is self-sacrifice, can it be beneficial? Or can there be more harm? Does it depend on how much or what type? And after that, I'm going to ask you something about can mothers create boundaries? And is that okay?
Well, yeah. Well, in the first 3 years of life, it's all about sacrifice. And that's a good thing because, again, what we've learned about child development, thank goodness we know now about attachment theory and bonding, and you can't hold a baby too much, and it's all meeting their sensory needs, and you have to give up a lot because your world, the baby needs you. And of course, if you're working and you have a caregiver, you know, that person takes on that role as the primary attachment figure as well as yourself, but it's a lot of sacrifice. You don't sleep, you know, it's hard in infancy. And then when mm-hmm. kids start older, that's when we start really paying attention to what, like my mentor, Dr. Catherine Kersey, used to say, our job as a parent is to work ourselves out of a job. And so we really want to start to allow our children to become more independent, but it's always going to be some element of sacrifice as a parent. That's part of the deal. But what happens, I think, there's so much sacrifice, it's more about losing a sense of self and the than the identity of being a mother. We don't want to lose the fact that we are a self separate from being a mother, because then when our kids leave home, that's when we really struggle. And we really want to make sure that we have our own life and we have interests and things that we like to do and hobbies and relationships that aren't all about the kiddos. But you know, parenting is sacrifice. It's mm-hmm. I think it's more about making sure you don't sacrifice your own identity. And that happens a lot because when, you know, that's what I found in my research and my own work and my own parenting experience a long time ago, as we established earlier, is that I totally forgot who I was. And oftentimes we don't even develop a sense of identity when we have kids. I wasn't a teen, but I was in my early 20s when I had my oldest daughter. So I really hadn't fully developed a full sense of self. And in development, it's ideal to have a full sense of self. I know who I am in the world and what I like to do and who I am. Then I get married, then I have a child. That's the ideal progression, but it doesn't often happen that way. We usually, get married, have kids, and mm-hmm. we're still trying to figure it all out. So I think sacrifice to some degree, but not to sacrifice our own identity. And finding things to do that we like to do and taking time for ourselves, even in the first 3 years, is so important to refuel. And that's what my daughter and I were talking about last night, too. You know, one of the chapters in my book is remembering the oxygen mask, because when you fly on an airplane, the flight attendant always says, you know, if you're flying with small children, make sure you put on your oxygen mask before you help them. And I think as far as parenting goes, that's number one, is we have to find time for ourselves. And so in the first 3 years, when I'm saying it's so much sacrifice, that's where partners and, you know, support systems are so important, to just give mom a break, to refuel, to do something that recharges the battery, so to speak. So that's really important throughout. And again, when the kiddos get bigger and older, the more you stay focused on what you need to support your own identity, the better. And that really helps the empty nest transition as well.
I would guess that, too, that would also set an example for the children mm-hmm. as far as what to expect or how to parent.
That's a great point, a very, very, very good point. And you know what I notice with these overindulged kids, these parents who just give and give and give and give and give, it creates a lot of anxiety. I have, high school kiddos that I work with who have so much anxiety because they don't want to disappoint their mother, because their mother has, sacrificed everything, and they feel obligated, and that's not good. That's not what we want. We want kids, exactly, that's a really good point. You know, the word discipline comes from disciple, which means to teach or train, and we want to be a role model. We want to be a role model for how we have a self, a healthy identity ourselves. And that doesn't mean we abandon our kids and we, are narcissistic. It means that our kiddos see, wow, mom's got a life. What cool stuff mom's doing. Look at that. And I get to choose. My teacher, Catherine Kersey, say, don't make your kids take piano lessons just because you want to take piano lessons. You take the piano lessons.
Good point. Excellent. Yeah. Okay. That is so good. My best friend, and I've known her. We've been best friends 20 years, so I know her parents and her children. But I remember she said, my mom and dad, they had those three kids, and then as soon as we all got out and got married, she goes, we did not drop our kids on her door. She goes, oh, no, you brought that little person in here. That little person's going back out the door with you. She said they set their rules. And she said, they were very loving parents. They taught them. I mean, her father wanted to make sure that every one of them was a chess master so they could help their critical thinking. But I thought, yeah, I think it's those examples you can set. So.
Yeah, especially, it's about having that identity.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Don't force them to take piano just because you wanted to learn. I love that. That was one of my favorites.
And it happens a lot. I mean, I'll share. I always have to share my favorite quote. My teacher, Dr. Catherine Kersey, I got a master's in early childhood education in the early 90s, and she was such an incredible human being. She wrote several books, The Art of Sensitive Parenting and some other ones. And I would go out and do a lot of lectures for her in the community and always share this quote, which is, children come into the world very much like a packet of seeds. without a cover on the front. And it's the parents' job, very much the gardener's, to provide the adequate water, air, nutrition, and light to raise a seed to its highest potential. It's not our job to raise a rose into a carnation or a carnation into a rose. And I love that because that's what happens a lot. You know, we're projecting our own unmet needs onto our kiddos and what we think they ought to be instead of witnessing who and seeing who they are and giving them the nourishment they need to fully become who they are. So when we force a kiddo to take piano lessons when they're, you know, an athlete or a mathematician, that's not going to go well.
So I like that analogy, but the seeds. What about when mothers, and, but what mothers do get, say they have, you know, a lot of responsibilities. And, you know, I think it's, and remember, I'm just a lay person, so I'm happy to be corrected if my info or my point of view is wrong. But it seems like now there are a lot of situations where with parents living a longer time, maybe mothers have their children to raise, and then they've got older parents to take care of. And I just see so many people just in a, like a state of just being so overwhelmed because of so many responsibilities. What can mothers do when they're just sort of beset on all sides? Somebody needs them everywhere they go or everywhere they look. Where can they go for support?
That's a really good question, too. Yeah, the sandwich generation. So important to not neglect our own needs. Again, the oxygen mask, and to find some little ways to fuel in between support systems. I mean, the research I did when I wrote my book on the Schreiber Report had just come out at the time, and they had done a ton of research on women, and they found that, you know, caregivers have the highest incidence of physical illness as well as mental illness, depression, anxiety, addiction. If we don't take care of our bodies, we're not good for anybody. So in answer to your question, it's a tricky one. It's back to the boundaries that you asked about earlier. You know, we have to set boundaries. We have to find support systems. We have to refuel and get that oxygen mask on. And it's a lot. And I think the most important thing is to have people to have empathy for that instead of it's, you know, well, it's just your job and you got to do it. That, you know, the empathy of really hard. You're really going through a lot right now. How can I help? You know, or here's some resources that might help. It's
like,
tough.
And I like, I can only imagine. I'm writing this down, too, to make sure I remember. Remembering the oxygen mask, that's so important. Or, you know, as we all seen they're never on my flights, but I get nice ones. The nice flight attendants that you see on YouTube giving a speech about put your oxygen mask on first before the child. And if you have two children, just decide which one has the greater earning power. And put that one up first. You've seen those? Anyway. I love those. Why do I never get on that plane? But so let's talk about, you mentioned your book. Let's talk about your books. I know you've got one coming out that's going to be due out in the spring. Your last one's the one in 19, Letters to Freedom. And before was Living in the Shadow of the Two Good Mother Archetype. Letters to Freedom. Would you tell us about that? Because I just think this is such an important book.
Yeah, it's definitely a vulnerable piece of my heart. It's a memoir. I was dating a man named Lawrence Freedom, and I call him the midlife man of my dreams. I had lost my father when I was a kid of a sudden heart attack when I was 11 years old. And, you know, as a therapist and a seeker and a curious human, I realized that it had really affected how I did relationships. And so I had known Lawrence for years here. He was an addiction counselor and had a lot of respect for him. And his wife passed away and suddenly as well. And about a year later, him and I went out on a date and we just fell madly in love. And less than 2 years later, he died the same way my father died of a sudden heart attack.
Oh, no.
And it was a relationship about healing my grief around my dad, because I thought I was so wise and I knew what I was doing now and I was going to do a relationship different with him. And he was so willing to support me in that. And we were running into a little struggles toward the end of our relationship. So I was writing him love letters. And that's why I titled the book Letters to Freedom. And then the subtitle is From Fear to Love to Grace, because he was writing a book and doing some classes, and he called that From Fear to Love to Grace, because he had learned from losing his wife that, you know, the fears that we have in our life that, open us up to love, and then the loss opens us up to something greater, which he was saying he felt it was grace. So I divided the book into three sections, fear, love, and grace. And the first part's about my dad, and the second part's the wonderful love story, and the third part is, you know, my experience of my grief and grace after he died. So, it's a very personal, sweet story.
I liked it on your website. And by the way, the website address is Patty, PattiAshley.com, PattiAshley.com. If you go to the website, on the tab, training and events, where it says the very first thing on the menu, today is the day, Fear to Love to Grace Summit. And I love the fact that you have the pictures of both these men, your father, you know, your father that died when you were 11, and it's a picture of him from World War II and the picture of Lawrence Freedom. I just think it's beautiful to have them there to kind of help us feel.
It was interesting because when I was planning the book launch, I was working with this coach on doing a virtual book launch, and we looked at the beginning of 2020, even though the book came out actually a year ago on Lawrence's 65th birthday, April 9th last year. We were trying to do this virtual launch, but I was in the process of writing my third book, and we looked at the beginning of 2020, and I said, well, we don't want to do January because, you know, everybody's just getting over Christmas, and how about February? And I said, oh, how about February 4th? It happens to be the anniversary of the day my father died. That's perfect. Let me do the math. And it was 50 years. So I was like, that's synchronicity at its best. That to me is grace. Because it was such an honor that I got to do this big launch on the 50th anniversary of having lost my father. So it was an honoring both of these men who I adored. And thank you for noticing that. My dad was a pretty, pretty awesome human.
Oh, you just can't help but look at that picture and just feel like he's somebody you'd really like to meet. You know, very handsome man, but there's just, you know, some photos just really take give you the person's, it's like you know them, like their essence is coming through. The same with your father and with Lawrence.
They had a really fun sense of humor. They had so much kindness. They were such kind men. And it's funny because even though I think the picture of my dad is the World War II picture, so it's somewhat of a serious, you can still see the little smirky smile. And, you know, it's funny because I was channel surfing, you know, in all of this quarantine over the weekend, and there was a movie about a biography about Jackie Gleason. And I used to watch Jackie Gleason, Red Skelton, Ed Sullivan with my dad every weekend, and it was just such a fun time. So I watched this documentary of Jackie Gleason, and then yesterday I was channel surfing, and some of the old Red Skelton shows came on. And so I was watching these comedians, and I was thinking about my dad because he wasn't, you know, a stand on the stage comedian, but he was a funny, sweet, lovable man. So thank you for noticing that.
Oh yeah, well he's got a smile on this picture, and even though it's one of those older photos where you can still see him clearly, to see his, you know, his eyes are real bright, his eyebrows are up, his smile, and that little up on one side. You know,
you can see the little smirk. He was funny. He would say these silly, dry jokes all the time. You laugh, yeah.
I think that's great. I just love that. Your other book, now before Letters to Freedom, I'm going to have to get off that page. I think he's talking to me. I don't know. Let's talk about all of your books. I know what I want to know, too. This is just way out. Oh, and by the way, for people listening live, if you have a question that you want to ask Dr. Ashley, you can call us in. Here is a toll-free call in the continental U.S. Blog Talk Radio assures me at 646-716-9922. Or for the people who can't make a phone call, and, you know, we've all been in that situation, Dr. Ashley, where you want to say something to somebody but you can't get on the phone because of your job or whatever, you know, you can always message me a question to Jennifer Maudette Perry or to Madame Perry Salon, and I'll be happy to share it. Let's talk about your books, and then after that, because I've got a couple of other things I want to talk to you about so much. Your first book, tell us tell us about your first book. I'm not going to ask you. I'm going to let you say it. I'm not going to try to lead you anywhere.
Yeah, I was raising my kids in the 90s, 80s and 90s, and studying parent education, doing parent education, and I kept feeling like there were so many moms that would come to my parenting classes and they'd say, I just can't wrap my head around this parenting thing. I just can't get it right. Everybody else is doing it right. I can't tell anybody I'm taking a parenting class. What's wrong with me? It was like this theme that was going on and on and on and on and on. So when I started my doctoral work and was trying to pick a dissertation topic, I thought, well, why don't I research women feeling good enough as moms? And what I found is there were no women who feel good enough as moms. And this phenomenon of all of this unconscious material that Carl Jung calls the shadow. The shadow is the part of ourselves where we repress things that we think might be bad. So connecting the dots to what I was saying earlier to the old parenting belief systems that, you know, talked us out of our feelings. And so a mom becomes a mom and she's supposed to love her kids and be happy and sacrifice. You know, we look at the 1950s moms, you know, what were some of those TV shows, Donna Reed and Leave It to Beaver.
Mm-hmm.
And those, you know, ideas of what a mother ought to be. But a lot of moms in the 70s, you know, going back to work and learning some new things didn't feel that way, but they didn't know what to do with their feelings. So what I concluded in my research was all those feelings went in the shadow, which was influencing us to do things such as we were talking about earlier, over-sacrificing, over-giving, smoothing things over, trying to meet our kiddos' needs without, you know, paying attention to our own, et cetera, et cetera. And so when I was finishing my dissertation, my doctoral committee said, this is really important. You need to write a book. You need to do workshops. And I'm an introvert, believe it or not, as much as I like to talk. I said, okay. So I started doing workshops while I was writing the book, and I got rejected a couple times and put the book away, and then somebody else later encouraged me to get it back out. So I've been doing workshops because what I learned is you can't do this work from the neck up. You have to embody it. And now the research is all proving that, which is when we talk about my third book, I'll speak a little bit more to that. But I intuitively decided, because all these parents that were reading books and the more books they read, the worse they felt, I realized that because there's some somatic memory in our body memory that needs to be shaken up a little bit and rewired. So I started doing weekend retreats where we brought in creative arts and music and poetry and dance. And then the book, finally, I got a publisher, yay, Nancy Cleary at Wyatt McKenzie Publishing in 2000 and, my gosh, when was it? 2000 and something. It's been about 6 or 7 years. And, and so I found themes in my research that, you know, women were experiencing around unrealistic expectations. The oxygen mask was something that a couple moms had mentioned, which became a chapter on self-care. The paradox of parenting, that it's always both and it's okay to feel resentful sometimes and not really like the job too much. But that doesn't mean you don't love your kids, and embracing the paradox, and then loving and letting go. Again, really recognizing that our kiddos are, you know, working ourselves out of a job and they're going to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the main themes, and each of the chapter talks about how some of the shadow aspects, the parts of ourselves that we don't really want to look at, might influence those areas, and how to bring them mm-hmm. into light and into consciousness and integrate them and have more mindfulness, balance, and authenticity is the summary of the book. So that was my book,
And that book, their first book, is
Living. Living in the Shadow of the Two Good Mother Archetype.
Two Good Mother. Okay, the one I mentioned earlier. Okay, you see, I'm distracted. I'll admit, I'm distracted by something that I've posted it 2 weeks ago, and I posted it again now while we were talking. This cute little creature is like a baby. You know the baby Yoda? It's like a baby cousin it that says, mm-hmm. I am enough.
Oh. Did you see my enough? Have you seen my enough on my website? You have to go to my, I have an
yes.
enough.
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about? Oh, the baby Yoda. It is
yes.
my enough. Oh, you're so sweet. I had a friend. The story is I do group supervision with some therapists, and when I was talking about my third book, is on shame and not feeling good enough and reconstructing the authentic self. I said, you know, it's all about being enough. I just have to know I'm enough. And one of the psychologists, he goes, you're enough? I didn't know you were from enough. And I thought, well, that's a children's book. And then I said to a friend, I said, can you draw me enough? And so she had a friend of hers draw this little cute, like you're saying, a little Yoda guy. He's so cute. So he's my enough, N-U-F-F. So I'm enough. And I use that a lot with my clients and with myself and with my friends, because laughter and playfulness actually helps rewire the brain and helps us feel good. So, it's not neck up. We have to get it in the body memory. And so that feeling of laughter and playfulness really is giving us new neural connections that say, I am enough.
I am so glad you said that. Yes, the laughter does help us rewire the brains. I'm so glad you said that. Yeah, I don't know, it's like a little baby cousin it, whatever. I'm sure it hangs out with baby Yoda. But like I said, I posted, that was one of the first things I posted 2 weeks ago when I was leading up to having you on the show. And just to let people know, guess what's coming. And then, I don't know, I just thought, you can't, they're in a box. And if you go to the website, pattyashley.com, or if you see them on the social media where I've shared them on Twitter or on Facebook, you just can't look at it without smiling. And then it's a little box, and they have the ribbons around them. It's a little something for people, and it says sometimes we all need to remember that we are enough. These playful I am enough images bring a bit of humor to your day to lighten your spirits. So place them around your home and office to remind you that you're enough. I just think that's so sweet. Anyway. I'm glad. I hope you didn't mind me sharing the enough.
No, I'm so glad you did. I've got my enough right in front of me right now. I look at it all the time. It you actually laugh and you exhale, and it really is healing. And I think that's the part in our left brain culture we don't really understand, because we're so logical. You know, we try and be logical about things, and that's why I was saying the more books that moms read, the worse they felt, because they were trying so hard to learn how to do everything. It's not in the logical mind. It's in the sensory mind. And so when we're laughing and we look at that enough and we go, oh, that's funny, and we exhale, we're entering into the sensory bright brain, and that's the beginning of where the healing happens. So, no, I thank you for bringing it up. I want to do more with my enough, because I think it's very, very therapeutic.
Enough is very therapeutic. It is, and just therapeutic and joyful. Talk about, oh my gosh, so much I want to talk to you about that you know about, and I know I've only got you for a few more minutes. Living in the Shadow of the Two Good Mother Archetype, and that was published by Wyatt McKenzie. and there is a trailer for it that I'll share too. And people can buy your books from your website as well as Amazon or bookstores.
The link on my website takes you to Amazon, yeah. So that's the best way to do it. Just go to the website and click the buy the book, and then I'll give you a lot more information on my website too. I haven't put up yet. I need to do this. I've been working really hard in this quarantine on a online course that I'm developing called Go In, Not Out, Finding Deeper Parts of Yourself in the COVID-19 Pandemic. And it's 3 chapters plus an introduction and a conclusion. And we're going to talk about some of the things that we've been talking about tonight, plus a whole lot more, just in how you can kind of go in and seek some of the parts of yourself that maybe you might have lost when you lost your sense of identity, or you never really found your sense of identity. But I think we're being pushed right now to go inward and really ask some bigger questions. So it's Mystics Without Monasteries is the first chapter. The second one is the neurobiology of not feeling good enough. So back to what I was just talking about the, you know, changing the sensory messages in the brain and the nervous system. And then the third one is reconstructing the authentic self. So I'm hoping, I've got some tech support calls lined up this week because it's almost ready to launch. I'm doing a Facebook Live on Fridays now at 11 on my Authenticity Architects page. But if people go to my website and sign up for my newsletter, you'll get all the latest and greatest on that. I'm still finishing the last pieces to that course. But, yeah, I think it's really exciting to have the opportunity in these times of going inward to really ask some of these bigger questions. So I'm excited to launch that, hopefully.
Oh, that is great, and I'll be sharing that too. Please make sure that I have that information to share as well for people, or I'll keep looking to make sure I can share it so people can get the online courses. Because I'm not sure how old this, and some of the interviews of yours that I was watching or listening to, I know you mentioned you and your daughter were talking about you both love Paris.
Yeah, we've been trying to get a group over there for a couple years, and obviously not going to happen this year, so we're pushing it off to next July. A retreat for women, and I love not Paris, but the south of France, 8 hours south of France. There's a lot I could say about that, but that's enough. It's beautiful. It's great to go and be, and so much pleasure in France. You know, all about rewiring the brain by enjoying the beautiful places and the delicious food.
Well, we'll keep that in mind because, yes, it's amazing. As you know, how we had no idea things were going to change for us all so quickly. And all of a sudden, things that might have been a plan to go to south of France is now going in, not out. We'll do it online.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, south
you know,
house, basement. Yeah.
Yeah.
The
first weekend of March, I was in Tucson, Arizona. At Wild Wild West Con, are you familiar with steampunk? Kind of Jules Verne. No, steampunk like Jules Verne, science fiction, Wild West, Victorian wear kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I'm not.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It was it's a convention in Tucson, and there's a place there called Old Tucson. It used to be, it's like a little village, a little western village, and it used to be a place. It was set for TV shows and movies to film, like movies like Rio Bravo and such filmed there. And now it's a tourist attraction. But once a year, these steampunkers, which dress in Victorian clothes, but maybe with a little Western accent to it, we go there. And this is my third year to be invited to do a presentation on podcasting and a live broadcast. So we were all there the first weekend of March, and that's when more of the information was coming out about COVID-19 in the States. And at the end of that Sunday was when we turned our clocks ahead. We all went home from it at the end of Sunday, the 9th, and then most of us never went back out again. And we said we didn't know when we were turning the clocks forward, we were going into the twilight zone.
Right. I know. It is the most bizarre experience. I'll have to tell my sister about that. Like, she lives in Tucson. Is it the same time every year?
Yes, first weekend of March every year.
Oh, I mean, try to make it
old.
There. That's so
old
fun.
Oh, yeah, tell her about it. Yeah, she may know about it, may not, but if she probably does. But and people can, regular people can go there, I mean, regular tourists, but they can't go to our events without a pass. But they get a lot for their money being able to look at all of our costumes. So anyway, but, yeah, all of a sudden things just seem to turn on a dime, and some of us are, you know, doing, we're all doing our best to adapt, and that's what I said when your online course is, I wrote those words down, going in, not out. Yeah, that's just we're all having to adjust quickly to a new reality temporarily. We hope it'll be
And what I'm finding is the natural response of the change in our body rhythm and our routines is actually activating some of these old body memories. So a lot of my clients are having PTSD responses, and you know, there's no time in body memory. And so what's happened is we're in this collective grief. Our lives are changing. We can't go run out to Target and go, you know, run around and avoid, you know, being with ourselves. And so the visceral response in the body is telling us things and trying to get our attention. And so, again, out of the shadow into the light, what a great opportunity for people to really just take a look at it. Because I think there's some really deep healing, because again, can't heal it in our logical mind. So if our sensory body feeling is getting activated, this is a great time to really shake it up and take a look at some things. So I'm excited about the course and getting it launched, like I said, hopefully by the end of this week, beginning of next week.
Well,
it's
please,
free,
yeah,
and
people
can just do it at their own pace.
Oh, okay, great, even better. Yeah, so just make sure that I'll have all that information to share as well to everyone. So if you, like I said, some people tell me they listen in their cars, so I know you can't write it down. I'll have all the information, and I'll be sharing it on all of my social media for you. We've talked about living in the shadow of the two good mother archetype. We've talked about Letters to Freedom. Letters to Freedom. Could you tell me about shame-informed therapy, the art and architecture of reconstructing the authentic self?
Yes, I actually just last night sent off hopefully the final round of proofing for the layout to my publisher.
Yes.
This is a large publishing corporation called PESI. It stands for Professional Educational Seminar Institute. I've been doing trainings for therapists with for years and just put it all together in this workbook. So it's mainly for therapists, but the worksheets in there are really helpful, and a lot of the worksheets are actually in this course that I'm doing for free. I shouldn't probably say that out loud, but so a lot of the worksheets in the book are the activities that I suggest people do to activate and to excavate some of these parts of themselves that maybe have been hidden or gone into the shadow. And it looks at the neurobiology. So that's the cool part, is we know now that shame and trauma have a very similar neurobiology, in that there's not enough neural connections that say I'm emotionally safe and I may not be lovable. So all these people that you meet who say, oh, I just can't say I love myself, or no, what, I have to be kind to myself, what, I don't know. You know, that's because the neurobiology didn't get set up that, and it, to a degree that says, I am lovable, I am enough. And this is why my enough is so healing, because it's like, oh, I am enough. That's right. Yes, it's my birthright to be lovable, to be enough, to be emotionally safe.
Mm-hmm.
But when we go back to all these old parenting practices and a lot of the old antiquated, you know, ways we've done relationship, abusive, neglectful relationships, even in the smaller context, you know, some of the emotional abuse from that idea of stop crying before I give you something to cry about. We don't get the neural connection that we need to feel safe. So So this book is all about rewiring and reconstructing the authentic self. It's super cool, I think, and in terms of putting all my work together.
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, me too.
Again,
in June. So we're looking at June.
But I like to study.
We were hoping to have the book out in the spring, but it looks like she's telling me if they can get this layout finalized, it'll be out in June.
Out in June. Okay, great. Yeah, that sounds like definitely a book for our time now, too, as with all of your books. All of your books are very valuable. And I've noticed, too, reading parts of them so far, I haven't finished them all, but reading parts of them, watching and listening to some of your interviews. And I think one of the things that I've noticed, and I think this now I understand why, I think your books read similar to being with you. And I've noticed that when you interview, when people interview you, you talk to them and make them feel, it's easy to feel like we trust you from the sound of your voice, the way you look at people, the way you talk to us, and the way you write. You give us somebody who we know we can trust. You have the information. You have the intelligence that we need to learn about. You said in one interview that you knew even as a child, even after your father died or even in high school, you knew what you wanted to do. You knew that you wanted to help people live better. And I think it shows in everything you write and everything you say, Dr. Ashley.
Well, thank you so much. That's quite a gracious, lovely compliment. I'll take it. Thank you.
Well, I ask anyone. I don't say it if I don't mean it. And that's just why I was just so, another reason why I was just so excited to have you on here. Hopefully, when your new book comes out, if we're lucky, you'll come back and talk to us again.
I would love to do that. Thank you. This has been a delightful interview. I've really enjoyed talking with you. And yeah, I mean, that's what Authenticity Architects is all about. That's my new brand I've moved into. I've finally realized that's my work. People, like coaches I'd worked with in the past, you know, they would like say, you have to have a niche. You have to have a niche. I'm like, I don't know. I want to work with mothers. I want to work with grief. I want to work with shame. I don't want a niche. So my niche is authenticity. That's my niche.
And it's perfect. And it's what we need. It's what we need, Dr. Ashley. Thank you so much. So to everyone, thank you. You know, I've been talking with Dr. Patty Ashley, and, you know, I've been sharing all her books, the cover, everything, all the information. I will continue to share her website address and everything else you need or any questions you ask me about how to find her online courses. That may be going out online on this Friday, which we need, and we thank you for. So, Patty Ashley, much continued success to you, much love to you, and much health and good vibes to you and all of yours. And we're happy that you've been here on Madame Perry Salon. And to everybody else, remember what I always say, everybody's got to swing. Come back. I love you. Bye, Dr. Ashley.